get fitted for clothes or a suit or pants every now and then, they're always like, oh, your thighs are kind of big and your butt. And I'm like very proud of that.
They go, you're white, right?
And you know, I am, actually. I am.
That's right. I am proud of that. I am proud. I am not worried about me eating a few extra calories and getting a little more badunkin' dunk and thunder thighs, okay? That's what we are here at the podcast. Chris Sims Unbuttoned. It's a Monday after week two. Ahmed Farid is here. He is trolling me again with my Chris Sims Unbuttoned shirt. Sometime in the future, I will get a shirt as well. But for now, you sport it so handsomely. Awesome day again. Good to be here with you, bro. How's
good to be
going?
Here, too. Thanks for the quick turnaround. I saw you last night with Catherine Tappan on Peacock. That show was good.
It's good. Always fun. We have a good time together. It was, you know, highlights in football. It works well.
It was crazy.
Yeah.
I was thinking that week one set the bar pretty high.
Yeah.
And you always need it. There's going to be a letdown at some point.
Yeah.
Like maybe it's going to be in week two.
Right.
It was not in week two.
No, it definitely was not in week two. I think we can expect this. You know, I think this will be a reoccurring theme almost every year in the NFL right now. And I think we might even see craziness again next week. Teams are still finding what works for them, what doesn't work for them. Lack of preseason play makes teams inconsistent, mess things up. You know, we saw a lot of teams screw end of the game situations up. So I think there's a lot of that. And then week two also gets into, you know, we've had this discussion a lot in our history. It's you're 0-1. The building in the NFL gets so tight that even if you're not the better team that you're playing, the desperation factor of, oh, no, we could go 0-2. And you very rarely see teams come back from that, right? It's only, you know, maybe one team a year, every few years, whatever, to where that desperation factor, I think, you know, plays a big key into the craziness too. Wait, we got to do something here. You know, we got to do this. We got to call a trick play, whatever, to find that advantage to get to 1-1. And yeah, it's crazy when you look at the NFL right now and you go, there's only two teams undefeated in the AFC, the Chiefs and the Dolphins. And in the NFC, you know, we had the Giants and the Bucks as 2-0, and then the two teams that'll play tonight, Minnesota and Philadelphia. So I think it just shows you how equal the league is, right? And just it's how equal the league is. And then, yes, teams not really knowing exactly what they are or playing their best football, you know, leads to some crazy things. At least that's my take on the situation.
Bills undefeated. Could be 2-0.
Right. So they, you're right, right. The Bills, too. Exactly right.
But you're right. The number of teams who are undefeated is dwindling very quickly.
Yeah, the Dolphins of 72 are going to be, you know, popping that champagne bottle here maybe early this year.
You go, do we even have one for September? Right. I don't even know if we have that.
Seriously.
All right, so we're going to go through all the games. That is our promise to you, the homies here. We'll try to keep it under 4.5 hours. That is our promise to Kristen and our crew here today.
Yeah.
But we might have to go over because there were some crazy games.
There was
some crazy comebacks once again. And that's where we're going to start here, because we did this last week too. The comebacks that are just mind-boggling that you're like, all right, they might make it close, but there's no way this team will come back. I think we had two games that were 98% win probability for the team, and one of those games is right where we start with the Dolphins coming back, beating the Ravens. Just a miracle. Amazing.
It's alive.
And here you
two
go.
Two and odds alive.
So this is what I'm saying. This is where we start.
Yeah.
Do you finally have to capitulate to the Tua lovers out there and say once and for all, you were wrong?
Well, I'm not saying I'm once and for all. I'm not going to say that in week two, okay? I'm not going to do that yet. I'm not.
Yet?
No.
You're leaving the door open.
Of course
that that's a possibility.
You know who I am. Yeah. I always try to keep it real. I'm not going to be stubborn and just go, well, I said this 3 years ago, and I'm never going to get off that fucking pedestal, and I'm going to stay there forever. That's what idiots do, okay? So I'm not going to do that. No, we've seen encouraging signs 2 weeks in a row. Certainly that was special. I mean, that was special yesterday. That was amazing, like you're talking about. It really is. But at the same time, am I going to sit here and just go, oh my gosh, I'm sold. He's definitely capable of bringing them deep into a playoff run? No, not exactly. I mean, as awesome as it was, and they're an awesome football team that's fun to watch, and there's talent everywhere on their football team, and that was a magical comeback. I'm certainly not taking anything away from that. I think we got to also be real in the situation of here. There was some unbelievably dumb shit the Ravens did at the end of the game too. You know, so amazing comeback, and the pressure the Dolphins put on you on both sides of the ball, which, you know, I think, hey, the first thing, the Ravens, they got embarrassed last year, right, on the Thursday night game with the all-out blitz package against the Dolphins, and they got upset. Remember, I think the Dolphins had one win during the year at that point.
Yeah.
That kind of jump-started them. You know, there was a talk all this week about the Ravens. We got answers for this defense. We're going to be prepared this time around. Well, they were prepared. There's no question about that. They made some big plays against those everybody at the line of scrimmage look, whether it was the Lamar Jackson long touchdown run or even the Rashad Bateman one play 75-yard touchdown pass. So that was cool to see. You know, they kind of said they had a plan and they showed it to us. But, you know, on the other side of the ball, you know, kudos to Miami for hanging in there a little bit. And then really putting together a tough drive in the second half to make it 28-14. Great throw in the middle of the end zone to Gesicki, right? So now it's 28-14. Lamar breaks the long touchdown run mm-hmm. on the next drive on a 3rd-and-2, I believe, if memory serves me correct. But then from there on out, I think Tua offense, McDaniel made a lot of great plays, kept being aggressive, all that. I think the concerning thing to me is just though, like, the Ravens are going to win the game if they can just make the Dolphins drive for a period of time. But the Dolphins scored so quickly and so abruptly that it was, I mean, of course, yeah, they had a chance to come back in the football game. And I think, you know, again, as awesome as the plays were and the pressure they put on the Ravens defense, the Ravens with some monumental
sure.
F-ups in the fourth quarter that certainly made it, you know, more realistic for them to come back.
It was 3 touchdowns in the fourth quarter in 15 plays
yeah.
to tie it up.
That's right. There you
That's
go.
That's insane. 15 plays is all it took.
That's insane.
For the Miami Dolphins to tie it up. And it was almost like, and correct me if I'm wrong here, there was a blown coverage out there.
Yeah.
They got some new pieces in the secondary due to the Ravens. And
Definitely.
So they're still trying to figure it out.
Yes.
But it almost was like on a couple of, they just, the players themselves underestimated the speed of Tyreek Hill, it looked like.
I feel like it was all game long. I mean, it was. I was during the game yelling in the room going like, wait, how many times are they going to like be in press situation or like the safety's going to be at 12 yards and he's Tyreek Hill's like next to him and he's not going to respect his speed and let him get by him or threaten him or either way. It was a little shocking. It was over aggressive. You know, it goes back to our old saying. This is like the thing too, where in the NFL, I don't, coaches are never wrong anymore as long as they say we were being aggressive, right? Well, you were up by 35 points, but we were being aggressive. So we kept blitzing. And you know, we were just aggressive. We were trying to win it right there. And I just, you know, not that they were being crazy aggressive, but I think unnecessarily taking, you know, chances that you didn't have to. And then I think to your point too, like two new safeties in a system that's complicated. You know, one's a rookie, Marcus Williams, first year coming from the Saints. And obviously, you know, obviously there was miscommunication. When you have the long touchdown pass up the left sideline, right, to Tyreek Hill, there was definitely something wrong there. I don't know if it was Marcus Williams or Kyle Hamilton, who was supposed to be over there. But either way, somebody was supposed to be over there. They were trying to make it look like a blitz look and then drop out to cover two, and there was no cover two safety over there. So they made our man Jalen Armour Davis look bad because he just let Tyreek go by him, and he's supposed to have the safety yeah. there. The first touchdown before that, the post to the right. You know, again, that's one I'll be interested to watch on film a little bit because I don't know exactly. All I know is Marcus Peters was in a position where he was one-on-one. There was no safety help. And Hamilton was over on that side of the ball, but looking across the field like he was been coached to, hey, we want to put you here to scare them from throwing to Tyreek, but we're really going to have you look up for a crosser or something like that. So I don't know. Again, maybe he messed up. Maybe he was coached to do that. But those are things I got to see on film. Either way, good job by Tua and them taking advantage of those open plays there and, you know, making a game of it. And then the clutch drive in the end really put him over the top.
He is the second youngest player since 1950. We like to go back to 1950. We don't like to go back before then.
Nah,
it's a different
who
game.
Who cares about
then.
That? Yeah.
Second youngest player since 1950 with 450 passes. Yards and 6 or more touchdowns behind only Patrick Mahomes. I think, Kristen, do we have the graphic? Have we already shown it? The fourth quarter, the crazy fourth quarter. 4 touchdowns in just the fourth quarter alone. 13 completions, as you mentioned on the Peacock show last night. Plug for that show. 13 completions for 199 yards. They were stretching the field. Some blown coverages there. But we got a comment here from Brady Horn 26. It says, damn okay to Tua. We haven't even gotten to the damn okay section
yet.
Yeah,
but he's giving it to us. This guy's a producer here.
I'm a big Dolphins fan. Finally started having some doubts about him in the first half yesterday. That's funny because I saw some tweets, too, from some Dolphins fans that said, if you think Tua's the answer, you're a homer.
Right.
Those are Dolphins fans.
Right.
So things changed in the second half. And he goes, but he shut me up right with the second half performance. I have the best I've personally ever watched. So Dolphins, like, here's the funny thing about it. Like, we go back and forth. Tua, you've never been a huge, huge fan of what Tua does on the field.
Right.
You've loved him as a person. You've interviewed him before. Dolphins fans don't want to admit it, but that's why the hate comes at you so aggressively.
Yeah, right.
Because there are obviously doubts out there. What would he have to do to finally get you to say, maybe I was completely wrong about Tua?
Yeah, I think I'm pretty steadfast on this. You know, again, that was impressive. And the fact that he was cool and calm under pressure.
The Waddle touchdown where he moves up in the pocket,
doubt,
finds
that
Waddle,
was great.
Throws it up.
The Craycraft one where he kind of spun out of the pocket, like 360 move. That's great. That's what he's good at. He is mobile like that. He is, you know, shifty and crafty within the pocket. There's no doubt. You know, but again, hey, it's early season football. There's mistakes, and there's people wide open. I'm not going to sit there. That's not going to happen in week 17. It's not going to happen in the wild card game where they're going to be like, whoa, look, they just happened not to cover Tyreek Hill in the fourth quarter. Like, the game fell perfectly. So I still – and there was plenty of throws in the first half that were concerning as to the comments you're talking about social media. I mean, the interceptions were bad, right? I mean, but – really, ultimately, in the second half, again, it was really good. But, I mean, guys were wide open all over the place. And if they can continue to do that, that's great. And then they're going to be a real Super Bowl contender here as we go forward, too.
Well, that's what I was going to say for my second point is maybe this is just really good team construction, right? Because every team's going to want a Jalen Waddle and Tyreek Hill.
Yeah.
Obviously.
Right.
But maybe for a team with a quarterback that doesn't have necessarily that strong of an arm, that might need some wide receivers that are more playmakers.
No doubt about it.
It's like maybe, you know, it's like you've said, you know, this is a Tom Brady can do more with more than anyone out there.
Right.
Well, I mean, Tua is not going to make Scotty Miller an all-pro. But if you pair him up with Tyreek Hill and Jalen Waddle, I mean, then you got something dangerous there.
No doubt about it.
You've helped out your team and where maybe they are weak with some elite wide receivers.
Agreed. And then all the creativity they have before the snap, they stress you out.
Yes.
They get you going horizontally, right? It's, oh, wait, here goes Waddle this way, Tyreek this way. Hey, outside zone, Shanahan's zone scheme. Oh, bootleg out the other side. So they get you going this way, sideline to sideline. And then all of a sudden they do a play action fake. And because you're going sideline to sideline, now it's like Tyreek Hill 20 yards over the middle, right? Because, hey, we've spread everybody out, so now there's kind of a hole or a window to throw into there. There's certainly a correct formula going on, to your point. There's no doubt about that. You know, but again, what I would say is, as teams continue to gather information here with McDaniel and how he's attacking, I would think those windows become less and less wide open, and that's where you're going to have to see Tua make the plays and throws. You know, you said it, new pieces in the secondary. You know, the two safeties we mentioned, Demarion Williams, right, a rookie who played a lot for them, number 22. Marcus Peters is not 100%. Marlon Humphrey was a game-time decision, right? So there was a lot of issues here, right? Other thing I'll say, too, you know, just to the Ravens side here, the Ravens, in my opinion, and I got to go back and watch here a little bit more, but to me, overplayed the run game like they were playing the 1972 Dolphins with Larry Zonka. There was too many plays where I was going, but they're not going to run it. They can't run it. It's not that they're not that good up front yet to where they're just going to dominate you. They're just getting in these formations to get easy completions. And, you know, that was the big thing. You know, again, I've never seen a team that's so good at also, you know, I know we have the deep balls in the fourth quarter, but before that, I mean, how many times did he throw a ball out into the flat or a screen pass to Tyreek Hill? And it's, whoa, he got 10 yards by throwing the ball a yard behind the line of scrimmage. They are dangerous. You heard me talk about when we did the roster thing. It's, what did I make their roster? I think they were like number 6 for me, right? I left them out of the top 5. It's one of the best rosters in the game. They're creatively coached. They're really good. Don't know why Baltimore played so aggressive to stop the run. And Baltimore, too, where I worry about them a little bit, just to hit on them for a second, is they have no run game right now. That's a little concerning. It's 2 weeks in a row, and they can't run the ball a lick on anybody.
What do you mean? Lamar Jackson, 9 carries for 119 yards.
Yeah, that's where, I mean, it's too Lamar-centric now. And Lamar played great.
Hill was their second leading rusher with 16 yards.
Yeah, that's just
carries.
Not going to get it done for Baltimore Ravens football. That's not. And, you know, so there you have, and this is what's crazy about the NFL right now. I believe it's 35-14, right? I might have this wrong either way, but Baltimore goes down on a drive, gets stopped on a 4th-and-1, gives the ball back to you know, the Dolphins on a short field, yep. or, you know, half
it
field.
It was at their own 40. The Dolphins had it at their own 40.
40, right, so. There, right, right. So you're, you know, a completion away from maybe getting in field goal territory.
Yep.
So that, the next drive is, I believe, a run that ended up in a penalty, and then it was three straight passes. So it was a four and out, basically. They get the ball back. They go score. So now you think, whoa, this 21-point lead, we're doing good. And you're going, no, you're not. It's down to a touchdown here, and it happened within, like you're talking about, eight plays here. And all of a sudden, it becomes a game. And the momentum was so heavily on Miami's side, and they just, you know, basically, the Ravens fell apart as the game went on there.
Rocky Top 42 wants to give some love to Lamar Jackson. Damn okay to Lamar.
Gotcha.
He bet on himself, and he's making the Ravens pay here. Yeah, imagine if you're Lamar Jackson, 318 yards through the air, three touchdowns, no interceptions, 119 on the ground, and everyone's talking about the other quarterback.
That's, that is,
in this
it's unbelievable.
Game. Some weapons for the Ravens, though. Some the positive here, I'll just end with this.
Yeah.
The two fastest ball carriers in the NFL this week, both on the Ravens. Devin Duvernay on that kickoff return.
Ooh, he was flying.
Got going 21.5 miles.
Two?
Per hour, and Rashad Bateman was number two.
That was surprising. Yeah, when he took off, I went, oh, they're going to catch him, and he kind of like had another gear the last 20 or 25 yards to pull away from Xavier Howard and company. So that was impressive. And, hey, their passing game looks good.
If I was a Ravens fan, you're devastated that you blew this game, but you're like, all right.
There's a lot of positives.
There's so many positives,
right? They're
going
to get healthier on the defensive side of the ball. They'll be better on that side of the ball. And if they can get a little run game going, the one thing is Lamar looks good. And he looks like he is on his A game, that's for sure. Now, you know, we'll see. They got to put the rest together, certainly. But Miami is the story. Like you said, they're impressive. Miami arguably has the fastest offense in football. I mean, I don't think that's a crazy thing to say. When you couple the two receivers who both got three rockets up their ass, Gesicki's ability to run, Raheem Mostert at running back, you know, we get a 4x100 relay. I don't think anybody's beating the Dolphins. I don't think anybody is. And you know, even then the cast of characters they have around that at receiver, too, they're not too shabby either. So they are going to be scary that way. And it'll be interesting to see, you know, if McDaniel can keep coming up with the tricks and the formula and everything like that. Tua keeps playing this kind of football. Shit, they're going to be tough to beat.
Mobile quarterbacks like Lamar, so fun to watch. And that includes Kyler Murray.
Whoa.
It was ridiculous to watch. In the second half, Cardinals did nothing in the first half. They came back. They beat the Raiders in overtime, 29-23. And let's start for something with for our viewing audience here on Peacock or our YouTube channel, which we don't need to promote anymore. We don't care anymore about it.
We're at 50,000.
It's over 50,000, so you don't need to sign up for it anymore. We're there. We made it. We've arrived. Kyler Murray. We got the dots. Pete and Kristen, do we have the dots on the two-point conversion that was the craziest two-point conversion late in the game that we maybe have ever seen?
It was up there.
It went for over 20 seconds. He's standing in the pocket, scrambling. Raiders only rushing two. He's going back and forth. And he ended up running, according to Next Gen Stats, 84.9 yards.
It was amazing. I was getting the makeup at this time and going like, and, you know, I was driving the makeup woman crazy because I was like, would you get off me with this stupid brush so I could see this play? Because this is unbelievable. I mean, it really is. I think, it's he's a special talent. He is. He made some big plays in the fourth quarter. The Cardinals, they seemed dead in the water, and I went, oh, man, they got no chance of winning this football game. They're
even
screwed.
Even after that play, they were still down eight, and you're like, all right, do they even have a chance here?
It's so, like, all right, their defense played good in the second half. I mean, that's the one thing. The Raiders couldn't stay on the field. I mean, it was literally like three plays and we're out, three plays and we're out, three plays and we're out. And so, of course, the Cardinals kept getting the ball. At least it seemed that way. And then the Cardinals just, you know, as we saw last year, they have playmakers. I don't ever sit there and just go, oh, wow, they got it. They cracked the code. And they're just picking apart this defense. It's just, it's him making amazing play. It's A.J. Green making an unbelievable catch, you know, in tight quarters. It's, you know, then there's a little Hollywood Brown. So it's a weird feel for the Arizona Cardinals. I know they won the game. It was gutsy and all that. I just don't know if it's sustainable with the way they play. I don't look at the Raiders as being a real special football team, not for the way McDaniels wants to coach them, right? And, you know, as good as Derek Carr looked in the first half, it looked like they ran out of tricks in the second half. They're not a great running football team. And their defense, you know, minus the two edge rushers, they're not real special on that side of the ball either. And Arizona, as we know, even though they're like, I don't expect them to be as good, they do have speed and playmakers on both sides of the ball as far as receiver, you know, speed there. The quarterback, of course, is electric. And the defense, when you take in Buda Baker, Byron Murphy Jr., those type of guys, yeah, Isaiah Simmons with the big forced fumble at the end of the football game, they have the potential to be difference makers that way. I still worry about their front seven, you know, and their offense in general, but, man, that was a huge win where at halftime I was literally going, man, the Cardinals are going to suck this year.
Yeah.
They're in deep shit, and they don't look good.
It was 20-0 Raiders at halftime. Cardinals outscored them 29-3 from that point.
Everything's
forward.
Work for the Cardinals. That's where I guess I look at it.
But it almost didn't even at the end of the game. It's like I think they needed 8 or 9 plays from the 12-yard line in at the end of the game, scoring with no time on the clock.
It was an 18-play drive. Right.
There was a point in that drive, too, where they had a fourth down. The Raiders held. But then they literally held on that play.
Yes, Kyler right. was scrambling around. Right. Yeah. He stresses your defense out that way. Right. So you think you're doing good, but eventually somebody gets open, and now you're worried about, you know, yes, they're like, wait, is anybody ever going to tackle this guy? Whatever. And you can't cover a receiver forever. That's for sure.
So Kyler's getting a lot of the love, but Tanner Morris, we got smart homies out there, of course, obviously, right? Yeah. He goes, Kyler Murray certainly deserves a damn okay for taking over against the Raiders, but what about left tackle DJ Humphreys? Absolutely shut down former teammate Chandler Jones, made sure he never got that revenge game.
Yeah, it didn't seem like he popped at all.
No,
it
didn't seem.
I think DJ Humphreys is really their you know, blue chip lineman on their football team. I think we tried to talk about him last week a little bit, I think, actually. I mean, he's the one guy I do look at. And they were a little healthier on the O-line in this game compared to week one altogether. And they were better. They certainly were. You know, yeah, I thought that maybe Max Crosby and Chandler Jones were going to give them issues. And even on a few of those plays where they scrambled and he made some great plays, like, they were very close to making the play.
Crosby did. He affected the game quite a lot
more
in the first half.
Yeah.
I think even in the second half.
There was
half
a few
was
times
close.
I felt like he was going to get a sack and fell off of Kyler Murray and, like, couldn't just bring him down. But, yeah, it's unfortunate. And it's unfortunate for the Raiders because that's why they got those guys. I mean, we know Max Crosby was there, but they got Chandler Jones because they went, I mean, we got to close games out when we got a lead. And, you know, for them not to be able to do that, that's kind of a heartbreaking way to go down in your home opener.
I feel bad for Hunter Renfrow. He fumbled on that. He was really trying for the extra 1 or 2 yards, get him into field goal range. I didn't think that was egregious. I know he fumbled 2 plays before that, too, but it was kind of similar, just trying to get every last yard. And then Byron Murphy picks it up and goes back.
Yeah.
Isaiah Simmons, great play to cause the fumble.
Yeah,
though,
just realizing, hey, I got a smaller guy. He's off balance. Let me waylay him. And he hit him hard enough to just, jiggle the ball free there. And, yeah, Hunter Renfrow's not a big guy. You know, it is. It's unfortunate. You're right. He wasn't doing anything wrong. He's just trying to get a few extra yards to set them up for the field goal where you thought, like, oh, wow, one more completion after this, and you're going, this is an easy field goal. They're going to win the game. And it turned just like that. I think the interesting thing I'm interested to see, too, is just the fact that I want to see what they did to Davante Adams.
Yes.
You know, there was 1 or 2 plays I saw where I went, ooh, Carr missed Adams. But for the most part,
2 catches, 12 yards, 7 targets.
Yeah, did not have the same day. And, you know, yeah, like I said, there was 2 I felt like that, okay, that could have been a completion. Other ones I felt like it was just like, he kind of just like, wait, I'm just going to throw it over there and hopefully he can make a catch. But they obviously had a plan for him, and he was non-existent really throughout the day.
Raiders with their largest blown lead in franchise history.
Man.
Dropped to 0-2. It's not fun for your buddy Josh McDaniels this week.
I feel bad for Josh.
And the Raiders. Not fun for the Browns either.
Whoa.
As the New York Jets come back, and this one, they all were weird and surprising in their own way, right? A couple of second half comebacks. This one was like, it looked like the Browns had this thing up until the final minute and a half.
No doubt.
Of this game. The Jets had a 0.3, so a 0.3% win probability following Nick Chubb's 12-yard touchdown run. And that's what I was planning on talking about today. I was like, man, he iced the game with a great run there. A touchdown before that was also Nick Chubb. I was like, man, he's awesome. Let's talk about Nick Chubb here. But I guess we have to talk about the Jets. But it was very similar to what we saw with the Baltimore Ravens. I mean, Corey Davis left wide open to get him within a touchdown there. It's like, how does that happen? The Browns have some issues in the defensive secondary for sure.
No doubt. I mean, you classify this one a little more with the Ravens one. Like the Raiders one, I look at and go, they didn't do anything wrong with how they were coached or approach it. They just had a fucking guy who is, you know, just a superhero at quarterback who they could not contain, and he made some great throws and all that. This is ones where the Ravens and the Browns can go back and go, wait, what did we do wrong? And like you said, I mean, he runs around the left edge for that last touchdown, Nick Chubb. And Nick Chubb, let me just say this. He's phenomenal. I mean, to me, he's him, Jonathan Taylor. You know, I don't want to miss anybody else here. And I know Derrick Henry's in that conversation. I don't know. I'm not sure. I want to see Derrick Henry if he is in their class still.
Well, that's what, I mean, preseason you had Jonathan Taylor number one.
Right.
And you had Nick Chubb as your number two running back.
They are, I mean, powerful, explosive, you know, can turn the corner, can make people miss in short spaces. That's where I think they're special. But, yeah, Cleveland, when Brissett, I mean, I was getting ready like, so what's the theme of the highlights? And I was like, Brissett was smart and played well.
He looked good.
And their offensive run game took over as the game went along. And I just, that was going to be the story of our highlight package when we did the, you know, Football Night in America pregame show there. And all of a sudden, wait, it's cover three? And Denzel Ward was the corner to that side. So now they're up 30 to 17, and there's really no chance the Jets have to win the football game unless they score fast, and they have no timeouts. So you're really going, oh, well, they scored fast, but, I mean, it doesn't really matter. They're still not going to win. Even when he threw the touchdown, I was like, oh, my gosh, the Browns, they're so stupid. Oh, my gosh. But I was like, all right, well, they still got to kick an onside kick here. There's no way they can really win the game. And then they kick an onside kick to the left, and, like, like, the ball is dribbling forever, and there's no Brown there to make a play on it, right? I mean, that to me was the other shocking aspect of it. So the Browns blew it, plain and simple. Should have won the football game, messed up end-of-the-game situations. They're going to be sick there.
Oh, so you're giving no credit to the Jets. And you know what? Robert Saleh listens to this
podcast.
He's
going to take a receipt.
He's going to take a receipt of what you just said.
Well, you didn't let me finish my sentence, all right?
Because I wanted to get that joke in before you
I gave the Jets the praise. Good. Thank you. You got it in. Yeah. Yes. But having said that, the Jets looked good. The Jets, I like, again, you know, competitive in the football game. I love that Saleh calls the fake punt early in the game to kind of get things started. Flacco looked good. Right? I mean, they run the ball. There's things to like about their football team. They're not as good as the Cleveland Browns. They're not. As roster, as complete-wise, I don't think they are. No, I don't. But, you know, you make a few mistakes like the Browns do, and especially at the end of the game there, and all of a sudden you're sitting at home going 1-1, and you clearly should have been 2-0.
Omri Peterou tweets in and says, hey guys, love the podcast. As a Jets fan who almost turned off the game with 2 minutes left, I think Garrett Wilson deserves a damn okay shout out. One big drop, but he made up for it later. Love from Israel. Oh, Israel.
Hey,
Omri, hello.
Yeah,
hello,
Garrett Wilson looks good.
And he got hurt in the game. And
right. Fell on his tailbone
injury almost.
Yeah, right.
And I was like, oh, he might be out for a while. Came back in. Looked awesome.
Yeah. No, he's got it all. There's nothing about his game where you don't like. And I guess the one thing I'm like, I'm still with him, like, how explosive is he? You know, but he's still, like, he's going to be their go-to guy as the season goes along, certainly. And again, that was an encouraging win. It was an encouraging win, but, you know, for the Browns, if you put him, there were so many points in the game, too, where, oh, my gosh, were they so close to strip-sacking Flacco, or it was, oh, my gosh, this is about to be a disaster, and he just throws the ball or gets it out of his hands before he gets hit and waylaid, and the ball flies into the air. You know, just there was no doubt in my mind as we were watching the game that the Browns were the better football team. But again, just messed up some crucial situations.
Yeah, and you mentioned it real quick. Jacoby Brissett, there were some scrambling plays where he created time. He's got a strong arm.
He has a very strong arm. I know.
He looks pretty good.
Yeah,
he
certainly can hold down the fort. Like we said earlier in the year, I don't think it's going to be shocking to go, oh, it's time for Deshaun Watson to come back. And the conversation of like, wait, Cleveland's in the playoffs right now. Do we really want to make the switch? Do we want to do that? That wouldn't be shocking. I mean, for them to be sitting there and like maybe they're 8-4, I wouldn't be like, oh, wow, I can't believe this happened.
At the very least, expecting them to take a big jump or a significant jump when Deshaun Watson gets in there, I don't think that's a guarantee. And I think it's possible. I mean, he hasn't played in a year and a half.
Exactly
now.
Right. It could be the opposite. Yes. It could be actually a negative thing, you know. And I'll even say it now. I mean, if they are in that situation, and we'll discuss it as we get there to evaluate where the Browns are, but if it kind of like, you know, hey, Brissett's been good and we're in the playoffs and things, I wouldn't upset that. I'd go, you know what, let's just let Deshaun practice and get back in the flow of the NFL, not throw him out there in a situation where now if he does bad, everybody's like, what the fuck? We paid this guy $230 million guaranteed. How stupid are we? Right? So I would want him to look at his best, too, and I'm not sure he's going to look at his best after not playing for 13 weeks.
So this is how crazy it was this past Sunday? Per Next Gen Stats, over the last seven seasons, there have been 17 games where the winning team had less than a 2% win probability at one point during the game. Three of them happened yesterday, and two of them were the Cleveland Browns.
That's unreal.
The actual Browns.
And the old Browns.
And the old Browns. Yeah,
right.
The Baltimore Ravens.
The Browns is the Browns.
The Browns in. Crazy comebacks here. So we move on now to the NFC contenders are back section of the podcast. We worried in week one, maybe, but no, they're back now. And we start with the 49ers, who have their quarterback back, unfortunately, under bad circumstances. Jimmy Garoppolo comes back. Trey Lance hurt early in the game on a run. Looks like he broke a bone in his leg, ankle area there.
Right.
He's going to have surgery today. Maybe already had it, and will be back next year, hopefully. And so that sucks to see, because for whatever you thought of Trey Lance, we wanted to see it happen with our own eyes. We wanted to see if he was quiet the doubters, or if the doubters had a point. You just want to see it, and that sucks for Trey Lance. And he's not going to play football for another year here, and who knows where this leaves his career. But 62 on the nose tweeted in. This is something I saw some 49er fans saying.
Right.
Would love to know what you thought of the play that knocked Trey Lance out of the game. Why call it?
Well, it's what he's made to do. And it's the thing that they can count on right now. Because you can't trust him picking anybody apart throwing the football. So what does Shanahan have to do? He has to use him as a creative run game opportunities.
It was a designed run for people who didn't see it. Second and eight, they were on Seattle's 21. But
the hit wasn't egregious. Listen, when the play happened, okay, I literally went, ooh, because I'd be interested to hear more about this. Maybe Shanahan or Lance will expand on it in the next press conference. It looked like he almost went down before he got hit. It's almost to me where I was like, wait, did his ankle give out before he got hit? Or was he kind of going down and his ankle got caught in a bad spot and then the guys piled on him? Because it's not like your old, like, oh, look, you could see his foot got caught underneath a pile kind of look, right? He was in the hole, square, and then kind of started like, oh, wait, I'm going to get hit, and tried to like start to go down to protect himself a little bit. And it's like he didn't get his cleat out of the ground or something. It was very odd the way it looked. But either way, yes, it's unfortunate. You know, again, we were all excited to see whether it worked or failed or what Shanahan was going to do to continue to get this kid to progress, right? And then I think the thing you just hit on is really my biggest concern. I mean, he didn't really play last year. The year before that was COVID at North Dakota State, and he only played one game. And here he is again this year. He's only going to play one game. I mean, we're going to year four before he's played sustained football for a guy that, like you've heard me say before, that people around the NFL go, he's a year away from being a year away. So now you're 2 years away from still that.
Coming off an injury that kept you out for a year.
Exactly. And so now he gets no practice this year, right? He's going to get into, the off-season program, and it's still going to be, oh, let me just feel it out and be careful a little bit. So that's where it really is unfortunate. But I will say this, don't take this wrong. I think it's a blessing in disguise for the 49ers. I really do, and I don't
not
mean
a
that.
I wouldn't say a blessing.
Well, a blessing
but,
in this,
but there's a
for
chance
their football
that they,
team and X's and O's. I'm saying
they
I
never
think
would
it
have.
Is.
Yeah, I see what you're saying. They never would have. There's a chance that they never would have reached the heights of what they have been with Jimmy Garoppolo. And I mean, I don't know why you would think they would be. It's not like he's 30 years old.
Yeah,
it's not like he's decrepit and falling apart like a Joe Flacco who can still bring his team back and win.
Right.
I think what you're. I understand what you're saying.
You know
saying.
What I'm saying? I just feel like it takes the pressure off the football team. Now Shanahan also doesn't go, wait, I got to come up with a bunch of ways to make throws easy for him and design runs to make this guy that, hasn't looked like the third pick in the draft look like the third pick in the draft. I think it put tremendous pressure on the whole organization. And then I know from other people around the league that, the players on the offense, there's a lot of them, they want Jimmy Garoppolo. George Kittle and Deebo Samuel, do you think they really want Trey Lance at quarterback right now? I'm just sorry. I'm just going to say it. No, I don't think they do. I don't. They're not going to get the ball in the receiving game from Trey Lance the way they are from Jimmy Garoppolo. So I think they're probably happy about that. And honestly, and again, I was excited to see where Trey Lance could go because, as I've always said, I think the potential of him being good with that offense is greater than Jimmy Garoppolo. Could we have got there by the end of the year? Yeah, I think there's a chance we could have, you know. But the way it looked, you know, even yesterday and last week, it was shaky. I don't know. And I felt like even watching Shanahan on the sideline during the game, that when Jimmy Garoppolo, early in the game, he's stressed. Like, he just, you know, he's hoping it goes right for Trey Lance and all that. I felt like he looked like a different guy on the sideline once Jimmy Garoppolo. Because now he's like, okay, wait, I don't have to be perfect. I can trust this guy a little bit. Yeah, he might not make great, unbelievable plays, but he's going to execute the offense. And you know, it was a good win. And long story short, 27-7 is misleading. This was an ass-whooping. I mean, this is an ass-whooping to the nth degree.
Well, yeah, Seattle's lone touchdown was the field goal that was blocked return for a touchdown.
They had one drive the whole game, and that ended in the halfback pass,
yeah,
right? Which I cannot believe Pete Carroll let them call that ball down there. That was their only chance to kind of get back in the game. And then DJ Dallas gets the little run to the right. Yeah. Or no, he's running Wildcat, right? And runs to the right and throws a ball right into the defender's arm. I think that was
Looney Ward.
Was that who it was? Was it Charvarius Ward?
I guess. Yeah. I don't know.
It was either Ward or Gibson. I can't remember which one it was there, but either way.
Either way, it was not his own team.
Yeah.
It was not his own team.
And that was night.
And
right
they muffed
there.
A punt after that. Seattle did.
Right.
And then the 49ers cashed in with Kyle. Yeah, yeah. They're back. But here's the Chris Sims stat of the game that I want to give you.
Right.
Geno Smith.
Yeah.
80% completion percentage. Highest for a quarterback with a minimum of 30 attempts in a game in which his team did not score an offensive touchdown since statistics were first tracked for individual players in 1932. We saw history in that game. 80%. That's good, right?
Well, again, he's not going to be the problem this year. That's where I just want people to know. I know it's Geno Smith. Yeah, they can run. And, like, let's keep it real here. It's still the same Seattle offense that I've had issues with. Yeah, I mean, you know that. Even last year, there's a lack of creativity. I've never seen a team struggle so hard to get their star receivers to football and get them involved in the game. And lack of plays where the first half was encouraging against the Broncos, where we're like, ooh, wow, there's some good game plan plays here. Ooh, that's nice. Ooh, 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 ooh. Well, the second half, they totally ran out. They had nothing. And then yesterday, I mean, there was nothing. There was nothing to look at any point where I went, ooh, they got something going here. They found the formula. I mean, that's where it's disappointing with Seattle. And, you know, they got to be able to, like, get Lockett, and I know he had a pretty good day, but Lockett and Metcalf in the game together and earlier in the game. It can't be always like, you know, they're the side story, and that's what I think bothers me about them altogether.
Could give a damn okay to, even though we're not there quite yet, premature damn okays to Talanoa Hufanga, 6 tackles, 1 tackle for a loss, 2 pass defenses. Someone to keep our eye on because I've seen him. He's strong.
He's
safety
everywhere
for them.
From USC. Right.
He's first 2 games of the year. He's been everywhere.
He has.
Go ahead.
Sorry, he took the Jaquaski Tart job, right? That's why he's not there. And yeah, he's a player. He was one of those guys when I was at Notre Dame, he was at USC. So I got to see him up close in person. One of those guys that was too big in college, right? Because the weight coach in college said, you got to get bigger. You got to do more bench press. Because that's what they do in the NFL. So he was big and a little, like a step slow, right? And I always wondered, I was like, wait, I don't know if he's fast enough to play safety in the NFL, but he's lost weight. You can see that. It was the first thing I noticed about him when I saw him in the preseason to go, oh, all right, finally, somebody got in his ear and was like, stop worrying about you bench 415 and let's run 4.5 instead of, you know, benching 450 because the benching's not doing you shit, all right? And, yes, he certainly looks the part. He's got great instincts. He always did. And, yeah, he's a ball hawk and he's, you know, got that crazy – you know, Troy Polamalu flair, too, when he's coming up to tackle you. And it's like a kamikaze, which is really cool to watch.
Nick Bosa also had a couple of sacks, 5 quarterback hits. He remains good. So the 49ers are back. He remains good.
Yes.
49ers are back. And the Rams are back, too. So that's bad news for the 49ers. Right when they come back, the Rams are back. Although They almost blew this game. We almost had another game with a 2% win probability flipped on its head as they beat the Falcons 31-27 in this one because they made the mistake of getting up, what was it, 28-3?
Yeah.
And the Falcons were like, we've seen this before.
We've seen this before. We're not worried.
We know what to do.
We can do something. We've learned from Tom Brady.
It was crazy, too, because when they scored that touchdown to make it 28-3, it was like Cooper Kupp out of the backfield, 10 yards. I was like, man, this is so easy.
Right.
I was like, the story was written. You had your highlight. Yeah, this is how I'm going to talk about this game. And from that point forward, give the Falcons credit, but it was a lot of Rams' mistakes.
This is another. I mean, they won, but we could almost classify them with the Browns and the Ravens of going, hey, you want to know how to fuck up a game? And you know, here's another team. You know, let alone, let's just say this. You know, the Stafford threw an interception in the red zone going in one time where you just go, are you, why did you throw that ball? At no point was he open. He was throwing the ball, I think, to Tyler Higbee down the right sideline. That was bad. You know, the 28-3, and I believe that was set up by the next touchdown to make it 28-10 was an interception by Stafford down the middle of the field that gave him a short to Mikel Walker, right? So you have that. Then you have that interception, a block punt for a touchdown, and then Cooper Kupp fumbles the ball. And yeah, I don't give a shit who you are. I mean, you could bring back the 78 Steelers. You do shit like that, you're going to be sweating it out at the end of the football game. The Rams are just, they're amazing. It doesn't matter what game it is. It's like, man, they're playing great. There's just always going to be a moment where they're going to fuck shit up. It really is unreal. I mean, even the Super Bowl last year, you just go, it's Rams fuck up time. And then they'll get it right again. But it's that Rams fuck up series. We're going to have two or three series where we're just going to fuck shit up to make good ratings on TV. And then we'll reaccelerate. They're frustrating that way, but it was a good win. And like they were better than a 4-point winner over the Atlanta Falcons, I think, to your point and to what I'm saying.
Do you, do you give any credit, though? This is 2 weeks in a row where Atlanta's been in a game, right? Saints, who we think's a better team than them.
Right.
And here we go, Rams are a better team than that. You know, we got to, and I think you've respected Arthur Smith quite
a
bit there.
I do.
They've got some interesting players. One of those interesting players is Drake London on the offensive side.
Freak show.
Fish Snoop Jr. says, Drake London is real. All caps, real.
Yeah, he is.
Even if the rest of the Falcons aren't. But maybe the jury's still out on that. And London catching the TD in L.A., which was cool. USC product, grew up there, too. And they targeted him. What was 12 targets? More than anyone, by far more than anyone. So he and Mariota got something good going.
No, they definitely do. They got somebody in there, this Drake London guy. I mean, they do. It, you know, you always hear me say something, it's a size league, right? He was a guy that didn't have a lot of yak or big explosive plays with the ball in his hands in college. But this is where the NFL is different. You know, it's not always about that. It doesn't matter. And they get you in spots to where, you know, they get you in spots, they put you in spots that are conducive to what your strengths are. He's a great route runner. He's big. And when he gets some steam rolling ahead of steam, he's not easy to tackle. They got some pieces for the future that are like, you go, wow. I mean, of course, him and Pitts, their O-line is good, definitely. You know, and then the rest of the roster, yeah, it just got some spots where, okay, it's good, but this is average. But well-coached, physical, outgunned in a game like that. Just not enough there. And Mariota, you know, hey, the way he plays, his ability to keep the ball in the run game and all that is very good. But me trusting him, whether it's a turnover, you know, that's one thing. He gets a free pass with this a little bit. He is kind of a turnover machine. I mean, he had a fumble last week going into the end zone, you know. And I don't always trust him to consistently hit bullseyes throwing the football. All right? He's going to make some plays. I know that. He's good. But I feel like we talked about the Rams, there's always like a play or two with Mariota where you go, man, I can't believe he did that. I can't believe he did that. You know, and he had the fumble and the two interceptions yesterday, and that's something about his game he's got to clean up a little bit.
Although I didn't hate the one that really sealed the game, Jalen Ramsey.
No,
there.
That was not
a terrible throw. I mean, he threw it up there. Brian Edwards just got out-jumped by Jalen Ramsey.
Right, but he had pressure. It was 3rd and 13.
Yes, they had a chance. I mean, he almost made
it was
that
not.
Happen.
I am with you. It wasn't horrible. That was not. I didn't look at that and go, oh man, that's horrible. No, that was one where, hey, you're in a kind of a desperate situation. You got to push the envelope a little bit. You hope your guy can make a play. And then the Rams got players, as we know. And Jalen Ramsey, that was a huge play for him to seal the game.
So the Rams are back. The 49ers are back. Another team in the NFC back. And they were back on Peacock Sunday Night Football Final with Chris Sims and Catherine Tappan. The Packers defeated the Bears 27-10. Kind of, you know, they made it look easy, which I think is we had them last year on Sunday Night Football, and they made it look easy against the Bears, even though the Bears kept it close, had a chance late in the second half. So I'm going to start on the defensive side here.
Yeah, okay.
We're gonna mix things up because we don't always do things like the other podcasts do.
Right.
You know, they all start with Aaron Rodgers.
Yeah.
And, you know, he owns the Bears. We don't do that.
No.
That's too easy.
Fucking own you.
Preston Smith.
Right.
Let's give him some credit here on the defensive side. Six quarterback pressures, had a couple sacks, a hit, three hurries on just 14 pass rush snaps. So wasn't necessarily out there a whole lot. When they were passing, the Bears didn't pass a whole lot. But the defense for the Packers, we said going into the year, like, all right, this is where maybe they have to butter their bread. Even though you got Aaron Rodgers, this is where you got to butter the bread. What did you think from the Packers' defense in this game against an offense that's not great, but still can do some things?
Yeah, it still can do some things, but they were dominant in the football game, I think, altogether. I mean, you take away really the opening drive of the game for Bears where they went down and scored the touchdown. They were really non-existent until, wait, the Packers are driving, it's 24-7, and they're about to, like, end this game, right? And or maybe it was 24-10 at that point. I think it was 24-7, where then the Packers had the exchange fumble, right?
Yep.
And Bears get the ball, and then they went down, and I believe that was the drive. They went and maybe got down to the one-yard line and didn't score on the touchdown, right? That was very close with Justin Fields. But to me, I think the big thing is this is the Packers. I think they're going to have to rely on this defense. I do. I mean, I think it's like they better get used to being dominant. I don't. First off, I mean, like you said, the Bears, they got some things to like, and there's good on both sides of the ball. But I don't think there's enough of, you know, physical dominant players on either side of the ball to where they're just going to be able to, against the good teams in football that are physical and got good players, we're just going to line up and play smash mouth with you and stop you that way.
Unless it's a monsoon. Well, then you might get them a chance.
Then you might get that. That's the Bears love the monsoon.
Yeah.
But I think that this is something we're going to continue to see. And they need to be more aggressive on the defensive side of the ball. That bothered me in week one. We know they got talent across the board. Those guys can cover people man-to-man, those two corners. So that was cool to see, certainly. The run game for the Packers was dominant, yes. And Rodgers was efficient. You know, but again, I'm going to say what you've heard me say. I'm not sold on that Packers offense. I'm not. I like the O-line. It's definitely run game might be the best thing they do this year. You know, but I'm not ready to write home and go, oh, man, hey, Mom, the Packers are back. They diced up the Bears, right? I'm not ready to go there. And also to that fact of, like, I just add this on, Amin. I mean, what the fuck with the Bears offense? What the fuck? Like, what? At some point, like, are you trying to win or are you just trying not to lose that bad? To me, I was bothered in the, like, when it was 24-7 going, okay, are we ever going to, like, actually throw a ball down the field? Are we ever going to do anything to go, like, hey, let's try to get back in the game, or are we just going to die a slow death and be like, well, we're just outgunned against the Packers? That bothered me. And to throw the ball 11 times, it was really 9 times. It was 2 very late throws. He was 7 of 9 going into, like, the very last drive of the game. I don't even know what to say. The NFL, this day and age, 7 and 9, and never really make any throws, call any plays to stress the defense out or back them off. No real quarterback design runs other than when it's 3rd and 1 and the fucking team's ready for it. Like, hey, they might do it here. It's 3rd and 1. Like, well, they're just, there was, I don't know. It bothered me, their offensive approach altogether, Ahmed.
Maybe they think they're the Ravens of a couple of years ago, right? Where that was very successful for the Ravens. They didn't have Lamar throw a ton.
No.
But they still threw
enough. Well, they ran him a ton, though.
And they did.
And they don't do that here. That's where I don't understand. I go, well, what are we doing here? You know, that's where, you know, it's a little, and I know they're out, you know, manned and don't have a ton of talent that scares you and all that. Okay. But so what? You're not the only team like that. You got to find ways to come up with some creative plays and explosive plays for your football team. So, you know, that's not sustainable the way they played. And like I said, Green Bay is good, but I'm not sure how good yet. I'm not. You know, I'm not. And I'll be interested to go back and watch that film, too, you know, with Rodgers. And was he pushing the ball and pushing the limit a little bit?
No, he was not. Because of all quarterbacks in week two, intended air yards per pass, so as far as you throw the ball down the field, he was last. 4.8 yards per pass down the field. So he did not push the ball anymore. But luckily, as you mentioned, Aaron Jones and company were great. Aaron Jones, 71% of his rushes were over the expected yards, according to Next Gen.
Yeah.
So he got more than was there, according to them, and that was the best in week number two. So that is your Next Gen stats portion of that.
He's a hell of a player.
Game recap. And the Packers, even though they got some issues, we're going to say they're back. At least they're in the back
section. Well, yeah, they're back. They won the football game.
Against the Bears.
I mean, I got to see it more. I got to see more. Because I'm just saying, Sammy, well, you know, I know Sammy had 3 for 93, and one of them was that 55-yard. Sammy Watkins and Randall Cobb aren't going to scare the good defenses in football.
Mm-hmm.
They're not. And I just want to go, okay, where's it come from? And I just don't know. You know, Dobbs, I know, had an awesome screen catch. They got like 20 yards at one point. I think it was like 2nd and 19. That was a big play, whatever. You know, Christian Watson, they got him the ball and some cheap completions here and there. You know, but yeah, I don't, you know, the way they play, that's not, to me, sustainable either. I don't think they can go on like a big run in the playoffs with the way they look on the offensive side of the football, at least, you know, not yet.
I will say, though, if you're a Packers fan and want to see Sammy Watkins doing some good things without the ball, that touchdown from Aaron Jones, the 8-yard pitch that made it 17-7.
Right.
Sammy Watkins out there blocked that corner for the Bears, Kendall Vildor.
Yeah, Vildor,
and blocked
22.
Him into like two other Bears.
Yeah.
And that really was the key to that play,
because
it was like A.J. Dillon was out there and didn't really need to block anyone because Sammy Watkins was destroying the Chicago Bears. Kind of fun. Maybe we can look at that on Wednesday.
Yeah, well, hey, those guys are going to have to block. Watkins, Cobb, I think it's going to be I don't think they're going to be able to rely on just the pass game carrying them here this year. That's for sure. So they're going to be needed in that area for sure.
So those are the teams that are back. And now, even though we gave some premature damn okays, this is the official section of damn okay.
Official.
Damn. I'm okay. Damn. I'm okay. Yeah, no, I mean, yes. Okay. The legal gambolizing. Oh, baby. I am Chris Sims. Okay. Damn. Okay.
Damn, okay.
Damn.
And there was one player that had me saying that more than any player of last Sunday, which
last
was just yesterday.
Of yesterday. Of last.
Of last night. Day. Aiden Hutchinson. The Detroit Lions beat the Commanders, had that lead. I was very nervous throughout the whole game. I even went to the point where it was 22-0. I thought about tweeting something positive about the Lions. But I was like, I know the Lions.
Yeah,
why would I
do
that?
No,
that'd be dumb.
Don't.
They're going to blow it. They almost did.
Them.
They got like 8 points, 7 points there, and then they were able to come through. But Aiden Hutchinson in the first half, he had 3 sacks there. And we got a tweet from our friend in Germany, Der Beobachter. Der Beobachter. We learned how to say it.
You think so? You think you said that right?
Yeah. It's not der, it's dare.
Der Beobachter, I believe, but...
Oh, like a Beobachter. close enough. He tweeted back, good to see you here, dare, again. He goes, damn okay, the young Lions playmakers, 3 sacks by Hutchinson, 184 scrimmage yards from German-American wide receiver Amon-Ra St. Brown. His mom is German. Awesome group. Amon will have a lot of fun with this team this year. Those are two players that I am pretty pumped about. For the Detroit Lions, their first win of the year.
Yeah, you should be. I mean, first off, Hutchinson, these are signs we saw in the preseason. I know we hit on it a little bit. You know, when I watch him, I go, I don't know, is this TJ Watt? Just a little taller and longer? It's the same looking guy. It's the same style, except he just has a little bit more maybe natural size and length. But you know, he's just got a natural instinct of shooting gaps, feeling a play out. You know, he's another guy that has great eyes in the backfield. Even if he's being blocked, he knows where the ball is. And then got the versatility to win on the edge. Third downs, they put him inside sometimes at D tackle. And, you know, of course, because of his size and strength and length there, he's okay against those guards. But then he wins with great quickness, like we talked about in the pre-draft process. That's part of his game. So that's encouraging. Amon-Ra St. Brown is their go-to guy. Honestly, I thought the Amon-Ra St. Brown end around for 58 yards was maybe the play of the game for the Lions, because that was the point where I was going, oh, man, they're in trouble. It was 22-15. Washington had all the momentum. I believe, you know, Detroit had kind of stalled out in a few drives before that on the offensive side of the ball. He made that play. And I went, woo, that took some pressure off them. And then they got back rolling again.
Well, it's still, they needed that. Because I think if they just kick a field goal at the end of that drive, they're still
in danger.
Scary,
right.
But 3rd and 15, Goff gets it out to Swift. Low
makes
throw.
Makes an unreal play.
He's on the ground, gets up, and DeAndre Swift runs it in for the 22-yard touchdown there. And I saw after the game, and I think this is really encouraging for me.
Yeah.
DeAndre Swift's a leader on that team, too.
It seems
I mean, they're
like
rallying
it.
Around him. He was the one that, I don't know, you can tell me in the locker room when Dan Campbell talked and then he gave his, like, all right, guys, get it together, and then the players talk.
Yeah.
It was DeAndre Swift who was getting them together and being like family on three. And so I thought that's interesting.
That is cool. It is. I mean, he's definitely one of their blue chip stars on the offensive side of the ball. They need him to be the leader, the guy. He's a playmaker. He's a guy that, yeah, can do whatever the coaches say, but like we saw in that play or some plays last week against the Eagles, can do more than what the play draws up. And, you know, players want to follow that in a locker room. So that's cool to see, and we know they're about running the ball and kneecap biting and doing all that, and then playing hurt yesterday too. I think that was, you know, he was kind of like a Friday questionable tag, I believe. Yeah. So that was awesome. But here's the big thing to me. This is the biggest thing to me because this is where I hope people can respect me. The star of the game was Jared Goff. Jared Goff was the star of the game. I mean, those are games where I've seen Jared Goff play before. It all of a sudden becomes a shootout, and you got to start making some throws, and the defense is playing some desperate situations, so they're going for it, and you got to throw a ball over the middle to Hockenson in the tight coverage to get the first down. Or you got to throw a seam route into pretty tight coverage zone there at the right side. And Goff was, like, made game-changing throws. That's something I've been a guy that's questioned him, certainly. But when this game became a shootout, I went, I was kind of like some of the thoughts you were having in your brain. I was kind of, they're going to fuck this up. Wentz is going to win a shootout against Goff. He's going to. And Goff kept firing and played well. I think it's the kind of win that can give their whole organization a little confidence in him. You know, to say, okay, hey, even we're in a tough spot, we could trust this guy to make a few plays and throws. That's the second week in a row he's kind of made some plays with his arm. So that was cool. And then the last thing I'll say about this game, Ahmed, too, and you've heard me say this now probably for about a month, like, Washington needs to come out firing. They have to stop this, like, we're going to be balanced Ron Rivera running football team. You're not going to run on anybody, Washington. You're not good enough up front to run the ball on anybody. They need to – I look at them and go, you need to be like the freaking – like the 2001 Rams. Just open up the field and throw it and let Wentz play that way. Your defense is not that dominant, you know, so I'm not sitting there going, well, we can play conservative and you're – you know, I think their way to go is put pressure on people with the weapons they have in that pass game. Logan Thomas is back. Wentz looks comfortable. Gibson's good in the pass game. It's just something I would like to see them kind of transition more to.
Yeah, I think Gibson was a former wide receiver.
He was at Memphis. So, yeah, that's what Memphis does. Yeah.
Gibson, Samuel, McLaurin, Jahan Dotson, who looked good again,
exactly
caught
right.
another touchdown, McKissick, Logan Thomas. Yeah.
Do you know what I'm saying?
Those are their weapons.
You know,
right,
and you couldn't rattle off their offensive linemen like that. I can tell you that because there's nothing really anything to rattle off there. So that's where I'd go. You know, I hope they push the limit a little bit with the passing game because we saw this 2 weeks in a row. Try to play balance against Jacksonville, all that. Oh, yeah, whoop-de-doo. When it really came down to, like, okay, we got to have it moments. Their passing game's going to get it done, and I think they're going to have to rely on Wentz and those weapons.
And the Lions were able to win the shootout. They have scored 35 or more points in three straight games. They have not done that since their 52-53 back-to-back championship seasons. That's what sucks about the Lions. Like, they've never won a Super Bowl. They were good just before the Super Bowl.
I know. It does stink. You're right. I know.
Those are basically Super Bowls,
yeah,
right?
Well,
I'm going to count them.
Yeah. No, we're not going to count them. Sorry.
Super Bowl negative three.
But it's like the Browns, too. How bad do you think they feel? They basically dominated a decade of football. And, like, no, everyone's like, you guys suck.
I know.
You know, you dominated the 50s with, like, Paul, you know, Paul Brown and Otto Graham and of course, damn, the running
Jim
back.
Brown.
Jim Brown, thank you.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, just winning championships every year, but they're relegated to, like, the shittiest team in the NFL.
Exactly.
Or at least that's how people think
of
them.
Get together with the Browns fans and talk. We're champions as well.
Commiserate together.
Micah Parsons could be a champion one day for the Dallas Cowboys, if he gets on a different team. Damn okay to Micah Parsons and the Cowboys, who beat the Bengals. Of all the results,
yeah,
and the comebacks were shocking just because of how they happened, but, like, final result, I think.
I'm with you.
This is the most surprising final result of the week. Goal line stand two gives a damn okay to Micah Parsons. Single-handedly wrecked the game. A couple sacks, five quarterback hits. The Bengals disappointing. Were you as disappointed with the Bengals as any team this week?
Definitely, yeah. I mean, that's like, first week we would chalk it up to, hey, it's the Steelers. Burrow didn't play much. They made some mistakes, but they still should have won the game. This one was like, no, they got beat. Plain and simple. I mean, period. All right, so first off, Micah Parsons is truly incredible. I mean, he's incredible. He's definitely one of the best defensive players in all of football. And, like, to the point to where, you know, again, it's just, I'm amazed still by the pass rush ability. I really am. It's to the point where it's like, I don't know, does he need to just stand up over there and play there the whole game instead of just, like, we think it's a passing situation? Because, I mean, the amount of pass rushes he gets compared to the other top pass rushers in football, but yet his sacks are still right up there with them. I mean, he's got to have, like, per rush, you know, per pass rush attempt, sack rate must be up there with anybody in football. I don't know if that's even capable of being looking up over, you know, if they keep that stat.
Pete's on it.
But, yeah. But that to me is what I'm amazed by. But within all that, hey, Cooper Rush, good job by him. Certainly didn't seem like he was flustered or intimidated by the situation by any stretch of the imagination.
He seems very even-keeled, almost to the point where you're like, do you realize you're playing in an NFL game?
Yeah.
Like, you haven't smiled or reacted at all.
Right. Jason Garrett, he said it in our meeting in the afternoon, right? He's just like, guy's blood pressure, it never goes up. He said something like that, or he's yeah. always low blood pressure with him.
He's not human. He might be a robot.
So that you know, that told you, because Jason Garrett, they signed him as a free agent, you know, coming out of college, to where he knows about him, and I think that's why he stuck around. They realize he's smart, he can execute the offense. Yeah, it's not great talent, but you know, they played a style of football that I think fits them. And then the team raised their level of play, knowing, wait, we got a backup quarterback here, and we got to play better than we did in week one. But still, the story to me is the Bengals and how disappointing they are.
Well, that's what I was going to say, too, is because it wasn't like Dallas played a great game or like a error-free game. They scored early. Offense didn't look that great for the rest of the game. And they gave up the ball. So Dallas, I'm looking here, second half when they were up 17-3. Jumped offside on a punt. Gives Cincinnati a first down. They get a field goal out of that. They get a field goal the next drive. And then the drive after that, Dalton Schultz fumbles. Result, Bengals punt.
Yeah.
So it was like the Cowboys were trying to give away the game at certain points, and Cincinnati couldn't do it. They made it close late. They did drive there late. Jamar Chase made one of the best catches of the week on that fourth down slant. Oh, where this guy was all over his arms.
What with strength.
Oh,
yeah.
Man, that's great crazy coverage, that he
right.
held on to
right.
that.
It is.
And they end up scoring the touchdown. But it took 19 plays. It's just a grind for them right now. And Burrow is still running for his life.
Running for his life. It's so disappointing. I mean, they got killed up front again. They got killed. For six sacks in the game, it could have been 12. I mean, if it's not for Joe Burrow and his ability to make people miss and throw a few away and scramble a few times, I mean, it's a sitting duck. It's embarrassing. It is. And same thing I'll say as last week. And you heard me say this a little last year. The offense doesn't do as much. And now people have caught on to kind of like, oh, wait, when they got two receivers to the left and then a tight end and a receiver to the right, they like these group of plays. So they're onto that. So the talent just can't overcome it. They can't. You can't be so stagnant and predictable. That's where, one, the O-line's not good, which is really unbelievable. I mean, it really is. I mean, to make the adjustments they made, and really, I go, I don't know if it's worse than last year right now than it was. And then, you know, I just look at the offense and go, it's the same thing I said last week. There's just, it's too player reliant. I never go, oh, they're attacking this, or, ooh, I like what they're doing today, or the pre-snap stuff like we talked about with the Dolphins. I mean, watch a Dolphins game. Watch a 49ers game. Watch Andy Reid. You know, watch those teams where they got speed and weapons, but you got to give them an advantage. You can't just go, well, Chase lines up here, Higgins lines up here, and Boyd lines up here. Set hut. Like it's like the vice versa conversation we have about the Eagles defense, where we go, it's so simple, a quarterback gets up and goes, this is great. Well, the same for the defense and playing the Bengals. They just go, oh, it's trips right. Oh, okay, we know the play. They're not going to shift or motion or do anything, so we don't have to worry about our checks. We can disguise the blitz or crazy look that Dan Quinn's dialed up for us, and Dan Quinn does a great job. You know, I'm impressed. It's year two of keeping you on edge a little bit. You don't know what exactly he's going to do on a play-by-play basis. But, yeah, the Bengals, very discouraging there with that performance. And, man, 0-2, and it hasn't looked good. Yesterday was more concerning
totally.
Than the Steelers game.
Totally.
Right.
Jared Cowboys on Twitter thinks you might need to change something.
Yeah.
He goes, you better change that photo of Burrow on your Twitter account. Put in Cooper Rush there. into your headline. Here
well,
you
I
are.
Don't want to jinx Cooper Rush.
Hand to hand, if you're just listening, he's hand to hand when you interviewed Joe Burrow because you wanted to compare hand size.
Right.
Right?
Right.
You're like, are my hands bigger than yours? Yeah. It's like a power play. You were trying to like, it was like
I'm
a power.
Better than you at something.
And so ever since that picture was taken, Joe Burrow has never won an
never
NFL game.
He's been getting sacked and hit and interceptions go lower everywhere. But I did do it to Josh Allen, too, and he's on fire. So you can kiss my ass,
one
everybody.
Game in. One okay, game one in. Game we'll see in. What we'll happens see tonight.
You're right. The other thing I want to say about this game that just is interesting to me is like, is Richard Sherman going to – did you hear like, my dad got attacked by Richard Sherman on social media last week because my dad kind of made a point of the Cowboys are going to be okay. They'll manage the game differently with Cooper Rush, right?
Sherman went after him on Twitter?
He kind of went after him on Twitter.
What did he say?
Well, you know, along with Pat McAfee. Oh, my gosh.
Yeah.
Pat McAfee did too. He gave the eye emoji like he was looking in on it.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. But nothing. They just were like, they thought it was crazy, my dad's thought and all that stuff. So,
oh, that's interesting.
Yeah. I sent him like a little tweet out last night, just like with the eye emoji back at McAfee. Like, are you going to apologize or say anything or just laugh it off like we're bros and funny and ha ha ha.
What did he say? Move on. No response?
I haven't seen anything yet.
Nothing.
But it's early.
He won't respond.
Of course
I bet
not.
He won't respond. No. Speaking of sacks, there's a lot of sacks in this game for Joe Burrow. That was a transition I had planned like 5 minutes ago. Made more sense when we were talking.
Before I got into that last few sentences there.
Alex.
Yeah.
Isn't that what I did last time? I just said Alex before every transition. Damn okay to Josh Allen. The Jaguars. Man, the Jaguars.
Whoa.
That you got to feel pretty good if you're a Jaguars fan. Defeat the Colts 24-0. Josh Allen, 2 sacks. Forced a fumble as the Jaguars completely dominated the Colts and was almost as surprising. We said that the Cowboys win was surprising. I think it was surprising in the fact that not only did the Jaguars win, they dominated that game.
Like, never a doubt, right? I mean, never a doubt. The Colts were kind of driving to start the game a little early on, and then Matt Ryan throws a horrible interception to, I believe that was Rayshon Jenkins, right? So that just from that point on, it was just an onslaught. It was total dominance on both sides of the ball. It really was. And, you know, the Jaguars kept the ball after that interception. And Doug Peterson, you know, to his credit, he's gutsy. They went for it on a fourth down, converted that. So they get the touchdown early and really never looked back. I mean, it just Trevor seemed like he was in control throughout the day. I don't really remember seeing him miss a throw. Like, you know, he missed a throw or two in week one against Washington, not in this one. They ran the ball well. But the story, I think, is like what you said, the defense. The defense was dominant. You know, Jonathan Taylor couldn't get really going. Matt Ryan in the pass game had no chance at all. He was under pressure. The Jaguars won the battle up front on both sides of the ball. Colts O-line is probably one of the more disappointing things in, you know, the game right now to me as far as just not as dominant, I guess, as I expected. I don't want to say most disappointing, but the Colts are one of those teams that's just kind of disappointing in general.
Well, they didn't have
and
Pittman.
To be 0-2 is trouble.
They didn't have Pittman
I know,
in this game.
Huge.
And,
right.
So and they didn't have Alec Pierce,
right,
who was a guy that's hoping to step in as number two, maybe number three receiver. I don't think they had Shaquille Leonard on defense.
No, they did not have Shaquille Leonard either.
That's significant.
It
you,
is.
You don't want to make it all about the injuries, but those are three really key pieces. Had a hard time getting the running game going, and it's just crazy now. It's like 8 straight games that the Jaguars have won against the Colts in Jacksonville.
It is.
It's just that's insane.
I picked the Jags again. I did. I just,
well done.
It's just one of those things, you know, I don't know. And then the Jags, as we've talked about, the Jags are talented, you know. Their draft picks, their free agent signings, they're showing that they're pretty damn good.
I was going to say that because it's like the way that happened for the Lions, that Aiden Hutchinson fell to them at number 2. I was like, oh man, that's perfect. Perfect guy for them, former Wolverine, seems to love being there. I was like, but I don't know that means that the Jaguars messed up with Trayvon Walker.
No.
First 2 games, he's looked really good.
He is. He's really good. He's a physical, you know, presence. Is he maybe as instinctive as Aiden Hutchinson? No, maybe not, but I mean, he's the real deal. And then you couple that with Josh Allen. And then Devin Lloyd, their first-round linebacker from Utah, gets an interception down there. He's long and athletic-looking. I mean, my man Andre Sisco, my number one safety from 2 years ago in the draft, he's starting for them, you know, gets an interception. That to me could be a jump start for the Jaguars. Like, okay, hey, we got to win. You know, again, like we've talked about, they're a young team that's not battle tested, that hasn't done the little things to win football games like that. They did those yesterday. And Doug Peterson's a guy, as you see, like if you watch the post game reaction with him in the locker room, players love Doug Peterson. You know, he knows how to communicate. He is an ex-player. He has confidence in them. He's always like, should I go for it? Okay, let's go for it. I believe in you guys. And the team rallies around that. So that's cool to see what we got going on there in Jacksonville right now. Colts, though, it's concerning. It is concerning. It just, they don't have a look that I go, and they didn't even have it in the preseason. This is why I just was like, I don't know. I'm not sure. Are they going to turn it on in the regular season? And maybe I'm wrong here. But the offense struggled throughout the preseason, and nothing looks all that easy for them right now. And then what I worry about a little bit with Matt Ryan, and like I've seen here again yesterday, is it's almost like the Phillip Rivers year. I do worry about his lack of arm strength. To me, there does look like a drop-off this year in his arm strength. The ball hangs in the air for a while. And I felt like Jacksonville was like, we don't have to worry about anything deep down the field. Coupled with the injuries you talked about and then his ability to push the ball down the field, I felt like they were allowed to play aggressive and downhill for the most part of the football game.
What old, aging quarterback with declining arm strength are they going to have leading their team next year? That's the real question the Colts, right? Ben Roethlisberger out of retirement leading the Colts here. Not a great start for the Colts.
Butt whooping.
It has been a good start for the Buccaneers, even though not everything's clicking on all cylinders. They are 2-0. Maybe that's the best 2-0 you can have early in the season. Are damn okay as we stay on the pass rushers. Shaq Barrett against the Saints here. 2 sacks, 3 quarterback hits, had a forced fumble. The Bucs defense was the best unit of the day because the New Orleans Saints could do nothing. And really, outside of one quarter this entire year, the Saints haven't done a whole lot. But the Bucs had a whole lot to do with that. What'd you think of the Bucs defense?
Yeah, they're phenomenal. I mean, I got worried a little bit at one point when Akeem Hicks was out, and I was like, oh, man, Bucs are falling apart here. They got people falling, getting hurt by, you know, everywhere. But, you know, it was an ugly football game.
It was ugly.
Where you're sitting there, and it wasn't, like, fun to watch. And, of course, you're keeping your eye on it. But you're going, like, really? Are we really midway through the third quarter, and it's 3-0 Saints?
Yeah.
Like, I mean, there was nothing to latch onto, jump onto, whatever. But
no, there was. Ryan Succop made a 47-yard field goal to make it 3-3.
Right.
And then they're like, all right, here we go.
Here we go. Now it's time.
It's funny, though. Right after that, New Orleans started to run the ball.
And this was that the Tampa drive where they go down and then Ingram fumbled,
exactly.
Right?
Exactly. I think that was a hidden turning point in this game.
I would agree. I would say that fumble right there, because they opened up some holes, and you're going, oh wow, they're gashing them a little bit here, and then the fight happened.
Yes.
Right. So
the fight.
So let me just try to get this straight. The fumble happened, right? And then is that where Tampa went down the field and scored?
So Tampa, no. I don't think
they
scored yet.
They didn't score there
so
yet,
they had
right?
the ball.
Right. They punted back to New Orleans. I got to look at it again.
So I think – Brady was still on the field, but that might have been a turnover on – not a turnover end up, but that was like the third down
play.
Yeah,
so wait. So the fumble after Ingram fumbles, and we're going, okay, here they go.
Yeah, then it was the ensuing drive was the fight, but the Bucs didn't score on that drive.
No, they didn't. Are you sure they didn't? No, they did not. But they kept the ball for an extended period of time.
Yeah.
Too many men on the field and a punt, which was an issue. They gave them a first down, which I couldn't believe.
Yeah.
But then, yes, the Saints get off the field, and, yeah, secretly another, I think, turning point, if we're going to add on to the Ingram fumble, is the fight. The fight, I don't know what it did, but it flustered the Saints or whatever. Brady got mad at the ref and was yelling at the ref like he wanted pass interference, I think.
Yeah.
Lattimore probably told him to shut up or fuck off.
And I think
whatever.
Lattimore was also talking to Bruce Arians, who was down on the sideline.
Right.
For this
well,
game,
that, it's a weird, that's a weird look altogether, in my opinion. I don't quite get that.
That was
one.
A little strange. But yeah,
the ex-head coach is hovering over the sideline all the time.
Greg Olson goes on the broadcast. He goes, hey, Mike Evans just punched a guy, and now the benches have cleared.
Yeah.
And so that's how I found out something was going on here. Lattimore got ejected. You've made the point on the Peacock show, he shouldn't have gotten ejected. I agree. Mike Evans was crazy and pushed him down. And we do have some breaking news on that.
Yeah. Suspended.
Mike Evans suspended 1 game. No other player in the fight has been suspended. The Bucs host the Packers this week. So yeah. they will do it without Mike Evans.
Yeah, that's big.
But both were ejected in the game, Lattimore
right. I did
and
not
Evans.
Think Lattimore should have been ejected.
I agree
I did
with
not.
You.
First off, he didn't do anything. He told Tom Brady to shut up. That's perfectly within the legal limits. Tom Brady came back and said way more to him after that. Then Leonard Fournette pushes him in the face, right? Yeah. Mike Evans has nothing to do with the fight at all. Then Lattimore pushes him back, right? And then all of a sudden, Evans comes out of nowhere and just crushes Lattimore. So, you know, to me, yes, that's one where I want to go with the NFL. Like, wait, Lattimore's allowed to push Leonard Fournette back once he gets socked in the face by Leonard Fournette. And that's where I wish the NFL wouldn't do stuff like that. Just no. Evans was egregiously wrong. Lattimore did not start this. And. Nor did he finish it.
He didn't start the physical part of it.
He didn't start the physical part of it.
I agree.
No. And that was weird. But after that, gosh, you know, they get no points here. The Saints get the ball. Jameis throws that big post down the middle. And my man 35, Jamel Dean, I mean, that was a great interception, I thought. You know, in the end zone, it was a great catch by him altogether. And I think that kickstarted then the next drive for the touchdown for Brady and company. Yeah. They hung in there. Some bad calls on the Saints for penalties.
I was just going to say that. 10 minutes to go in the game, yes. Bradley Roby was called for that unnecessary roughness
like,
hit on
get
Cameron
the fuck
Brate,
out of here, referees,
where
with that.
Cameron Brate's bracing for contact, putting his head down, and Bradley Roby did. He did make contact with the head. But it's like Brate's also bringing his head down.
He was just putting his head in front of the ball carrier. It wasn't trying to strike the guy with the head. Yeah, when there's big helmets on heads, they sometimes touch. And we could sit there and argue, and I could go, well, Brate put his head down first again. You know, and Mike Pereira got on, and he was like, I wouldn't have called this either. This is not a good call.
Would have been 4th and 1.
Right.
It ended with... beautiful throw. I mean, Brady makes some of those plays, like just the way he stands in the pocket, his throwing motion.
It's so graceful and perfect, right? I know.
Rashad Perryman, 28-yard touchdown, and the way that the Saints were playing offensively, I mean, that was
pretty much all they wrote, right? Yeah. I mean, he did that. That was a great play by him, too, and one just, you know, being patient in the pocket, but then realizing the defender, P.J. Williams, down the field had his back turned, and he just went, wait, I'm going to just throw this ball kind of around P.J. Williams' head, and he can't see it, and my guy will grab it, and we'll go from there. And you're right. That kind of pretty much, you know, ended the game right there, because then what was the next drive? We had another interception by Jameis Winston,
I believe.
Right? I think it was another pick that gave him the field goal, and then a pick six on the next drive.
Yeah, that's right. Yep.
Right?
You're right. Yep. Field goal made it 13-3, and then, yep, the pick six with Mike Edwards going the other way. So, yeah, not great for the Saints. They got some things to worry about. The Buccaneers, they do too, but they're 2-0, so that makes it a whole lot easier. We don't normally do this, but we're going to make an exception.
Are we?
We're going to talk about the Thursday game, but I'm going to set a timer, minute and a half.
Okay.
Because it was a long time ago, but it was so significant. If you remember, Chiefs beat the Chargers 27-24. They had this guy, Al Michaels, on Amazon. He sounded pretty good. Think he's going to have a pretty good career.
Yeah.
That broadcast sounded good. Chiefs won, but the real story was the Chargers were down there. Justin Herbert about to go in. Gerald Everett was tired, gassed, asking for help, and then doesn't run his route or whatever happens there. Pick six, going the other way. Jalen Watson. And before that, there were obviously some magic plays from both quarterbacks, but really Mahomes. What was your minute headline on the Thursday game from last week?
The minute headline was, I mean, the two touchdown passes by Mahomes were magical.
Yes.
I mean, they were insane. You know, first off, the sidearm between two people, just flick of the wrist, throw a perfect spiral while doing it, even though it looked like it was like a shovel pass, but it still was a spiral. I mean, that's where I've never seen anybody be as magical with the football as Mahomes. And then the other play, the post down the middle, I believe that was to Watson, right?
Mm-hmm.
Where, you know, my big thing was I just was shocked that they gave him the opportunity. You know, they were stopping the big play all night long. Safeties were deep. And all of a sudden, they decided to pressure and go, Mahomes is just waiting for that. He was like, what? My body's cockeyed and I got feet off the ground? I'm throwing it no matter what. It hasn't been open at all game. And on the money. That was amazing. I will say, though, altogether, the Chargers looked like the better football team. I thought the Chargers, there was moments in the game where I went, whoa, this is concerning for the Chiefs. They couldn't really do anything offensively. And... you know, I know there was a few injuries on the Chiefs defense, but the Chargers were just picking them apart. You know, so there was like two or three parts of the game where I went, ooh, the Chiefs look like they're in real big trouble. Then we got to a point in the game where I believe it was 10-7, and I thought, oh my gosh, we might start to get in a shootout here. The Chiefs got the ball back, and I'm going, uh-oh, they're going to go down the field here and do something. And they got stopped on a fourth and or third and one and had to punt it out. And then I felt like, you know, again, okay, here goes the Chargers. They kind of took back control of the football game. But the Chiefs, just their ability to make plays in crucial moments is very special that way. And, you know, that's where they're dangerous. But I think as a team altogether, I was more impressed with the way the Chargers looked. I think that was more than a minute.
As a man who's had a serious injury on the football field, what'd you think of them playing Justin Herbert at
well,
the end?
Well, you're not going to take a grown man out of the game. My mind always goes, like, my wife's sitting there watching me. They're all, you know, every, you know, is there a spleen? I'm getting text messages. You think his spleen's hurt? You think his spleen's hurt? You know, either way, he was uncomfortable in that midsection just like I was. And it hurts to spread your body. It hurts to run or do anything, you know, but he wasn't concerned. And I mean, just was that not, you know, after running where he's going to get the first down, he just throws it away because he's in so much pain. You're like, oh my gosh, you could have just ran for the first down. But then makes the most damnedest unbelievable throw on fourth down.
I know.
You know, for them to set up the score there late. That was unbelievable. He is amazing. He really is. You know, their offense has more answers than the Chiefs. The Chiefs' offense bothered me once again in that football game. It's too much of just, this is a cool play, and we got good players, and we think it'll work. There's just not enough rhyme or reason, in my opinion. And that's what bothers me about them a little bit. Mm. And when they play a team that's got good pass rushers, doesn't have to blitz, and a guy like Brandon Staley, who obviously has a little feel for their offense and didn't go for it on fourth down and managed the game the right way, you know, they're going to be a handful. So that made me, like, honestly, the Chargers lost, but it made me a real believer in the Chargers.
If Justin Herbert can come back, I don't know. It seems like it might be kind of quick. You seem to be in a lot of pain.
It's
going to
be annoying. It's not going anywhere. I bet you he continues to play, and he's going to be bothered by it for the next 6-7 weeks.
All right. We don't normally do that, but we made an exception.
We have to.
We had to.
We had to.
Now you know what we have to do? Because
what?
We want to. Give me the headlines presented by Hyundai. Final three games where you're running a newspaper now. Newspaper business not doing great.
No.
So these headlines need to be good.
Yeah, I know.
You got a lot of pressure on you.
Yeah, I know.
Our first game, Giants defeat the Panthers 19-6, and your G-men have won again. They're 2-0.
Yeah, baby.
What's the headline?
When you gano, you gano. He's a weapon, man.
He is.
I mean, I think you take, like, you know, the kid in Pittsburgh, Justin Tucker. And then after that, I think Graham Gano is in the conversation for best field goal kicker in the game. I mean, he really is. And he's just another one of those guys where if you just get to the 40-yard line, you go, well, our guy can make it. It can work. I just love the way, you know, I think the Giants are playing the appropriate way for their football team. I think that's the big thing. Daboll realizes the offensive line's good, but not great. You know, they're not calling long developing plays down the field just to go, wait, we got to create a play. He's doing it with, like, hey, let's just be smart, get the ball out of Daniel Jones' hands, also getting him used to the offense. And we know he does have a problem sometimes of holding the ball too long in the pocket and gets strip sack fumbled. So they're taking that away from him to a degree. You know, they're pretty patient with the run game. And you see here for the second week in a row, like, the defense doesn't give up a lot of big plays. They make you work for it. You know, and they're like making a handful of plays here and there. They're kind of just hanging around and then waiting to the end of the game, and they're being clutch. That's kind of how I sum it up with the New York Giants right now. But are able to do that because of Wink Martindale and Brian Daboll's effect and them managing the game the right way on both sides of the football. That allows them to kind of hang around, and then they seem to make more plays down the stretch just like they did in week one against the Titans.
James Lennox 19 wants you to give some damn okay love to Xavier McKinney. He goes, we all know the Giants linebacker core is a mess. So the team's best safety stepped up, played linebacker most of the game, basically eliminating Christian McCaffrey from the passing game. Dude is the perfect fit for the Wink defense. Do you agree?
I do. He is the perfect fit. And you know, I can't sit here and tell you that, you know, I saw it all, but I certainly saw McKinney down by the line of scrimmage and, you know, affecting the game a lot. He's one of those guys we talk about, that hybrid nickel safety, can kind of do everything on the football field. He's super aggressive, super good tackler for his size. So yes, he is. He's a Wink, you know, jack of all trades type of football player for their defense. But yeah, I think, you know, all in all, it wasn't pretty, but it's like, Hey, they pull off the upset in Tennessee, who I'm not going to sit here and tell you that they're better than. But here was a game that was 50-50. And the big thing is I just look at it and go, they're not making the mistakes. In games like this the last few years, we'd go, oh, the Giants made two or three stupid fucking plays and they lost.
Almost did. End they of the tried. First half, Daniel Jones was very lucky on a pass outside. But yeah. Carolina didn't make that play.
No, Carolina didn't make that play, let alone put themselves in a 6-0 hold with fumbling the opening kickoff. And then the very next drive, Robbie Anderson fumbles, catching like a screen pass. And that got the Giants a little confidence, hanging around. And then they don't do anything, but their defense kind of keeps them in there. And then they finally go on an ugly drive to make it 13-all. And, you know, the rest is history. Yeah. And nothing was pretty or sexy. But again, I didn't think they're playing the proper way for what they are. And they're showing a toughness and grit. And I'm going to the game this week. Cowboys-Giants Monday night. I can't wait.
Where are you sitting again? With the people?
I don't know officially quite yet.
Because you talked a big game last time. You go, I sit with the people.
I'm definitely going to sit with the people. Oh. No, you don't have to worry about that. I believe I'm going to be in the mezzanine level, the second level. Okay. Right?
You'll dip out to go to the VIP suites every once in a while to say hi to the people you need to say hi to.
I'm not. I'm a man in the crowd. I want to be in the middle of things. We're going to go wait in line at the concession stands and everything and be like normal people. Right? Right? Okay?
Yeah.
We're not. I never liked watching a football game within a box, and I don't want to do that. And it's not the right experience I want for my kids in their first game at Giants Stadium.
This will be their first game.
First game at Giants Stadium for the Sims family.
Oh, that's cool.
So it's going to be fun. Yeah.
Take pictures, take video, and we'll show it on the pod.
All right, cool.
N-Rod pod host wants to know, what is more surprising, Bengals 0-2 or Giants 2-0?
That's a good one.
Bengals 0-2, right? Because Steelers, you figure, all right, they're better than them.
Yeah.
And Cowboys without Dak.
Yeah.
Like, they're better than
I think
them.
So, too. You're right. I mean, I'm shocked that the Giants are 2-0, too. But, yeah, I think that's the big thing. And, you know, the other thing, just with Carolina, and I know it's Baker Mayfield, and he hasn't been there that long, but, you know, my eyes are on Ben McAdoo. I'm just going to say that flat out. They are. It's just two games in a row where I feel like not many open people. Defense seems to be all over the passing game. You know, a guy like Wink Martindale, smart, knows how to break down a system, seemed to be all over their stuff for the better part of the day. You know, that's one I need to look at, too. Maybe Baker missed some plays. I don't know. But they certainly haven't been very impressive in the first 2 weeks on that side of the ball.
Neither offense was very impressive between the Patriots and the Steelers, but the Patriots got the win 17-14. Your headline for that game is?
I'm looking at something. Okay. The full Nelson.
Nelson Aguilar.
Nelson Aguilar. Play of the game, right? There. And, you know, this is a game of like, hey, defense and manage the game and who can run the ball just good enough to give their offense the advantage.
Which from your tone, I can tell you really enjoy those games.
Well, I actually don't mind these games. I'm not mad at these kind of games.
Yeah.
Football, the coaches got to really manage it the right way.
That's true. Yeah.
Right? I don't mind watching these type of football games, but I did come into the game going, if this is the kind of game it's going to be, the Patriots are going to win it. This is made for Patriots football. This is what they are right now.
Ran the ball well.
Mac takes care of the football for the most part. Makes a play here and there. We'll wait for one team to make a mistake. We know the Patriots are not usually the team that does that. I know they did in week one. They made a few, but they're usually not the team that did that. And that's kind of what happened. I felt like, hey, Aguilar making the big play. And then
Gunnar Olszewski.
Oh, and Olszewski dropping the punt. Right. I know there's another play.
A Bill Belichick mole. He's like, we're going to cut you, but you're going to be on a team. You're going to muff a punt. It'll help us go up 17-6.
Yes. Yeah.
And that's what happened. The Aguilar play, that was really the one big explosive offensive play in the game. I looked at the dots on that play, the next gen dots.
Yeah.
It was end of the first half.
Right. 25 seconds left, right? Just runs a go route, right?
Yeah, there were five receivers out on that route. Like, none of them had any separation. Like, they were blanketed. And even Aguilar was blanketed.
He
had
an
individual effort. And I was like, man, that's the Patriots offense.
Yeah.
Grind out some runs. No receivers are open. Try to just get enough points to win a game.
I think, the style of football they're going to play. You know, again, as we discussed last week, right, on Wednesday and everything, I don't know if there's enough creativity to think that they're going to be getting, you know, like the old days, they're just going to be getting people open 10 and 15 yards down the field whenever they want. Doesn't seem that way. So they're going to have to play it like run the ball, Mac play smart, defense play really good, and they're capable of that. We know that. So, but I think this could be a formula we see a lot from the Patriots this year. You know, 20-17 win, 17-14 loss, you know, 21-17 win. I think this is the range they're going to live in because I don't think they're capable of being in shootouts or doing stuff like that.
This is how good our crew is. We've got the dots from that play that I just talked about.
Nobody gets this dots together. And Kristen and Gabby back there today, too?
Is that okay? And Morgan's out here on the
Well, I mean, this is like, let's rewind it again. This is my point, though. Like here's what I'm talking about with just their offense in general. You know, not a lot there to go, oh, wow, they're really stressing them out. You know, I don't know, maybe he had Hunter Henry over the middle, 85. But either way, he just played a matchup. He saw the safety, 34, rotate to the middle of the field. He went, man, Nelson Aguilar, he's got some speed that we've seen this year. He can maybe beat somebody deep, and he gave him a chance. And it was just a phenomenal catch going up over Akilah Witherspoon to catch this one.
It was. Remember that time that one dude crushed him for not catching, you know, balls? He's like, I was catching babies
out of the building in Philly
and catching them on like Aguilar.
Aguilar's been shoving it up that guy's ass for a while.
He could catch a baby.
I think he can catch a baby and a lot of other ones too.
Final game of the day, the Broncos or Texans might not even want us to talk about this game. Both fan bases were probably very upset at many times during this game. Broncos did get the win though, 16-9, and your headline is
My headline is Russ against the clock. Whoa.
Yeah, it was like a battle. It was a battle for the Denver Broncos to get the playoff on time.
Well, we saw it week one. And then the Denver fans, which, you know, you've heard me say before, and I was telling Florio last week, the Broncos are so the king of that city that, like, they literally could have the Rockies and the Nuggets in the World Series and the NBA Finals at the same time, and they'd be like, we're starting the show with the Broncos. They're in spring practice. Like, and I know, you know. Yeah. So that's the way they are that way. And the fans, like, literally, I mean, that when we turn on the telecast, at first we were like, what are they doing? And they were counting down the clock so they would get the plays off in time.
I know.
Which was, you know, like trolling their own team, but kind of funny.
Yeah. Well, they probably thought they needed the help because they did. They did need the help. I mean, the offensive problems
still
for the Broncos, it's crazy. They have failed to score a touchdown in their last five goal-to-go drives. That ties the longest streak to start a season in the last 30 years. And so it's like they're not getting plays off. They got issues there. They got issues, and it's a new head coach, Nathaniel Hackett. And you got to kind of get it figured out, though, because first impressions, that's real. Right?
No
first impressions are real.
No doubt about it.
And unless you now rip off eight straight wins in a row, people are going to think maybe this is overwhelming to you.
Yeah, I get it. You know, the way the end, that's what happens when you mess up an end of game situation in week one. Now you're under the microscope. Everybody's watching. And yeah, now they haven't scored five times in the red zone, even though it's like, well, no, they did some good things in the red zone the other night. They just had the running back fumble on the 1-inch line twice, right? They're going to walk in, we think they're going to score either way. They've done good things. Yesterday, here was my big thing just watching the game. And again, and there's five games going on, but I kept going really early on. I just kept going, man, they're just going to try to drop back and throw it, and they're just going to keep throwing it, even though they're not doing anything, and it doesn't seem like any plays are happening. And the game shifted, in my opinion, just watching it third quarter, where they finally just said, wait, most likely the Texans were playing a lot of two deep coverage. That's what Lovie Smith, and they started running the football. That, to me, is where the game changed that way. And then the fact that, you know, again, the Texans, they lack explosive playmakers on that side of the ball. Davis Mills isn't going to make a lot of big plays with his arm. Brandon Cooks is the only guy they really got that scares you. And if a defense kind of takes him away, you just go, well, all right, so who else is going to do anything against us today? And that's the issue they run into. I felt like early in the game, the Broncos were trying to make it, like, we're going to make it look good for Russell and the team. And I want to go, yeah, but it's, you know, you're down 6-3, and I know you want to make the passing game work and make everybody good, but let's just win the game and then go from there. And, you know, fortunately for the Broncos and Nathaniel Hackett, they made that adjustment and really started gashing them in the run game.
Pete asked a good question. Should Nathaniel Hackett give up his play calling duties? Does he have too much on his plate right now?
I don't think so. I don't. No, I'm not ready to say that. You know, the end of the game situation last week was just, you know, plain and simple, stupid. I don't know what they were doing. The process was wrong. Pre-game thought of it was wrong. The whole process was wrong. But as we said last week, too, the thing that stunk about that is their offense looked good in that game. They made a lot of big plays in that game. They moved the ball up and down the Seattle field in the second half of the game. So, no, he should not. He was brought there to call the plays. What you want there, you know, is I don't know who he's got helping him out to be who do I lean on for game management situations. Or if I am by the sidelines for a second talking about the quarterback with the offensive line and a blitz we can't pick up and we're drawing something, who can I trust to be that guy? And there's a lot of young guys on that coaching staff too, so that's where I don't know where that goes there. But no, the reason he is there is to call plays, so we don't want to give up on that. It just wasn't a pretty day, but either way, they got the win.
You have to be really good at clock management and whether to challenge or not, or whether to go for it or not, because those are the things that fans are actually really good at.
Yes,
that's
you're right.
All we're focused on. Right? We don't have to worry about talking to the OC, the DC, talking to the players, personnel groupings, who's hurt, who's not. And that's all stuff the head coach has to think about.
Yep.
So we're just focused on all that clock management, game management type stuff. And so fans are actually pretty good at that. And so if you're not, that stands out.
It's glaring.
Fans.
Yeah, you become a social media star in a hurry when you mess up end of game situations,
or you're on the front page of the headlines and the newspaper. That was Give Me the Headlines presented by Hyundai. Great segment right there.
Great segment.
I would pack it in, but no, we got two more
got
games
more
to preview
about.
Real quick.
Yeah,
betting Monday Night Football. Our BetMGM. Hello, welcome at BetMGM. We're kind of getting around here.
We are getting around.
Aren't we getting around here?
We are.
Welcome to the podcast, BetMGM. So we got the odds for two games on this Monday. Titans at Bills. That's the early game. And then Vikings at Eagles is the Joe Buck, Troy Aikman game. First one, Titans-Bills. The BetMGM odds have Buffalo as a 10-point favorite. The over-under is 47.5. Chris, on Thursday's pod, you said Buffalo would win, but not cover. Win by 9.
Right.
Do you stand by Thursday, Chris?
I do. I'm never one. I pick the scorers and the winner of my game without ever looking at the spread. That's how I kind of operate every week. I don't want to be like, you know, affected by that and then go, oh, you know, BetMGM has it here, so let me adjust my score. Right?
Gabriel Davis has been declared out, though. So now do you want to change your score?
It's crazy. Is like, here we are. It's 11 days later, and they're still dealing with injuries. And some of them came about like later in the week last week. To me, that's always, you know, it's another conversation for another time. But it's guys don't even know they're hurt for a day or two because of Toradol, right? Mm. So then it's like 2 days after the game, and they're like, wait, my leg hurts. And it's like, well, yeah, you've been numb for the last 48 hours. So, yeah, you didn't know anything hurt. Right, that's what you see across the NFL. 10 points is just too much for me. You know that I could see Buffalo certainly controlling the game, but you know, a Mike Vrabel coach defense, I got to think they're going to have something in store to slow down that high powered attack. No Gabe Davis there, certainly. Right, you know, I do think they got, you know, the right people up front to where they can go, we can trust you to stop the run game, and we can put people in passing lanes to make things hard on Josh Allen and that aspect of their offense there. I think the million-dollar question is just like Tennessee passing game, you know, keep our eye on that because, hey, Robert Woods is there, we know, but he didn't have much of an influence on the game. Treylon Burks is there, who's looked pretty good, but still not like a go-to type guy. And Derrick Henry and the offensive line, are they going to regain the form we've seen in past years where they can be dominant? I'm not sure about that. And then we know this Bills D-line is different this year. So I'm picking the Bills to win, like you talked about, by 9. But I think it's like a tough 9, right? I don't look at this and go like, oh, they're going to be – like I could see this game being 23-21 with like 5 minutes left and Josh Allen goes down and puts a touchdown on the board to kind of put the game away.
So that's the first game. I need them to win convincingly because I got Josh Allen and Stephon Diggs in a couple of my fantasy teams.
Okay.
Vikings at Eagles, last game, BetMGM odds here. Philly is a 2.5-point favorite. Over-under is 49. Thursday, Chris said that Philadelphia would win 31-28. So cover here. What's your key to this game? What are you going to be watching out for, Vikings-Eagles? Because I like the Vikings, and I like the Eagles.
I like both. There's a lot to like here about either one. And I think that I picked the over for this game. I have to do my best bets.
Ooh.
All right. And my best bets this week, one was the under with the Steelers-Patriots where I hit.
Boom.
Okay. I was wrong and picked the Bengals to cover. right? So, blah.
Yeah.
And then I'm hoping to hit boom here again with this one. I picked 31-28. As you can tell, that's way over the over there. But I think the big thing I look at is, you know, Vikings' O-line looks real. You know, their ability to run the ball is real. I think the biggest thing I think I'm really looking at, because I expect Philly to move the ball on the Vikings. I do. I have a hard time thinking they're going to be able to slow down Philly. Can Philly slow down the Vikings at all? And I get back into our conversation. Is it going to be simple and just like we talked about on the last Wednesday podcast, line up in a defense, here it is? Because if it is, like, Cousins and O'Connell are going to tear them up, even though the Eagles have a talented defense. So that's something I'm looking for sure. You know, what is there a few tricks or disguises or something different to make Minnesota think? Because if they just play it close to the vest, as good as their D-line is and as big as it is, the Vikings O-line is good enough to where they're still going to run the ball with Dalvin Cook and company. And then if they get them in that type of mold there, we know that in the play-action pass, and he's going to have creative ways to hit them in the pass game, I'm expecting a little bit of a shootout. I am. I guess the thing, I don't know what I look at as one key to the game more than maybe just like what defense can make one big play, one big turnover. That might be really all the difference, because I think the offenses are going to have their way.
And will the Eagles cover Justin Jefferson, because the Packers chose not to? And it burned him. You know, that was a choice.
It was kind of a choice.
You look back and you go, you shouldn't have done that.
Well, yeah, and the Eagles don't do that stuff either. That's where I'm a little worried about it. The Eagles are a team that's like, it's a lot of zone. They don't put Darius Slay and go, hey, get this
good
guy.
Yeah.
So that's where
maybe
I worry about
that.
It.
Ooh, I'm going to watch that early
so
on
that's,
in the game.
That's what I mean. They got to do something off, like, hey, is it a third down? Can we double Justin Jefferson? Or are we just going to line up and cover three and go, whatever cover three play you guys want to call, go ahead. Mm-hmm. We're in three. And you call the best plays for it. That's what bothers me about
Philly.
We
go, our guys are better than your guys. And then it's like we get beat and be like, ah, crap, they're not. Actually, they're worse than your guys. All right, so that's all the games and two bonus previews and even a Thursday game, which we don't like to do.
Yeah.
But we had to
We're going to do it. We got to do it.
We had to do it. All right, so that's it. That's week two.
Week two.
If this keeps up, I'm going to be exhausted.
I'm definitely going to be exhausted. I mean, it is. It's
we need some games where I can turn
off.
It's
a whirlwind. Okay?
Yeah, whirlwind.
Yes.
Did I ever tell you that story about whirlwind?
No.
That's how I lost my spelling bee growing up. They say whirlwind, and I thought they said whirlwind.
Right.
And so I spelled it WORLDWIND, and they go, I was down to like the final five.
Oh, that's rough. I thought it was whirlwind my whole life until just a year ago.
So we both have whirlwind issues here.
I mean, a whirlwind's crazy. It takes you all around the world. So I always thought, hey, it's a whirlwind. It's crazy.
Enunciate whirlwind.
Whirlwind, right.
I don't think I would have got it anyway, but
damn, you
got
to get on.
Uh-oh. Chris has got, uh-oh. Oh, no.
Oh, my gosh. No. Did I do that?
Pete's got bad news. One of the best bets was actually incorrect. You did not have the under in Steelers-Patriots. You had Ravens-Dolphins under.
Oh, my gosh.
That definitely didn't hit under.
That hurts. That hurts. I have under written down next to both, and I didn't pick that one.
Okay.
All right. So there you go. So don't bet on me tonight. Don't take the over. Philly, I'm wrong.
And
okay?
I'm thinking about whirlwind now. What a terrible
way to end the pod. Damn, that sucks. That just ruined my Monday. But everybody, enjoy the doubleheader tonight on Monday night. It's going to be fun.
Your Monday is not ruined yet, out there.
We'll see. They need to really rebound here to go 1-2.
That's right.
Check us out Wednesday. You know what's coming. The What the F Happened podcast. The Treasure Hunters will be back.
Treasure Hunters.
We are uncovering treasures all around the NFL. Chris Sims, Ahmed Farid. I hope you enjoyed the Monday podcast. Peace out, everybody. Have a good one. Clap it up.